It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Allegheny County won't be among the two dozen counties in Pennsylvania easing some COVID-19 related restrictions this Friday. But County Executive Rich Fitzgerald doesn't think our region is far behind. Fitzgerald says he's in constant conversation with the Wolf administration about the metrics Allegheny County needs to meet to begin reopening. But they also discuss the county's nuances, which aren't always illustrated by hard data.
You know, trying to communicate with him, not just what those numbers are, because he can certainly pull up those numbers and see them with his health department. But really the fact that, you know, we also have this capacity of Western Pennsylvania eds and meds, an ecosystem of service providers with two great institutions, UPMC, AHN, as well as University of Pittsburgh Medical School, that probably gives us even more resources than other parts of the Commonwealth would have. We also are a very, as you can see, as with the numbers, Governor, you know, pretty responsible. People very early on took to the messaging. And I think, you know, I know we're the second highest population in the state, you know, very close to Philadelphia, but we're 10th or 11th in the amount of cases that we've developed in the state. So our numbers are far outweigh what our population would be as far as how well we've done. And, you know, we're responsible. We also have a health department, which not every county has. Very few counties have, as a matter of fact. So we've got, you know, an infrastructure here that would be, you know, a little more robust than they would have in other parts of the state, which would give us an advantage. So those are some of the conversations that I have with the governor and his team. And again, he's been very supportive of Southwestern Pennsylvania long before this pandemic. He's been a great partner, and I don't expect that to change anytime soon.
How will the county health department proceed? Will they be charged with making sure that restaurants and others follow any new COVID protocols? Or are we just going to be relying on business owners to do the right thing?
I think you're going to have a little bit of both. I mean, you're certainly going to have the State Department of Health is going to empower local authorities to do certain things. But to be honest with you, a lot of this is going to be social interaction and social pressure. And I use an example. We've outlawed smoking in certain places, certainly in elevators and in certain rooms. I don't know that anybody gets a ticket or gets, you know, thrown in jail for smoking a cigarette inside of an elevator, but you just don't do it anymore because the social pressure of doing something like that would not be tolerated. And I think you're going to see the same thing here. If somebody is in a retail establishment, a restaurant or a store or whatever, without their mask, there's going to be a lot of social pressure to make sure you put that mask on, because that mask isn't just protecting the person who's wearing the mask. It's about protecting everybody else.
One of the metrics for reopening, and that's the number of new cases over a two-week period. As you and I speak, we are well below that threshold, but it is hard to know for sure how many cases there really are. How do we trust that the virus won't surge back as soon as restrictions are lifted?
Well, there's no way of guaranteeing that, and that's something that that's why we're going to be continuing to have robust testing. That number that comes out every day that the health department releases at 11 o'clock every morning is one of those numbers all of us, you know, rush to see what it is. It's a number like people look at the weather report, or they look at what the Dow Jones is doing that day, those type of things. This is an important number that we all look at every single day to see if there is an elevation of spread of the coronavirus in our community. So, and it'll be even much more worrisome when we do start to open some things up, because obviously the potential then becomes that we would see a spike in those numbers. And if there's a spike in those numbers, what'll have to happen is things will have to close down again. So we don't want to go there. We don't want to have to open things up, close things up, open things. You know, it's very disruptive to try to operate that way. So it's going to be incumbent upon all of us to continue being responsible for our neighbors, being responsible particularly for our senior population who's most vulnerable, and others who have any underlying health conditions that puts them at a much greater risk than other folks in the population.
If the virus returns in the fall or even sooner, will we have the testing and medical supplies that we need?
We have been given indication from our health professionals that that will be the case. You know, talking to Dr. Bogan and her team, the epidemiologists that have been working at the county health department and working with our partners at the state, the one thing that has occurred really since this began a couple of months ago is you've seen laboratories, private labs, as well as, you know, the governmental labs continue to find new ways, new techniques, new testing procedures that are coming out. And I think that will continue. My sense is that while the testing potential and the ability to robustly test has been slower than I certainly would have liked to have seen at the federal level, our indications are that there will be enough testing to give us an indication that how much of the coronavirus is growing in a community.
And are you confident you can get the supplies, though?
The one thing I have learned in this time is things change very, very quickly. Things happen. Things are developed, you know, whether it's PPEs, whether it's testing. So you've got to, like, continue to stay on this, and there's no really resting and just, you know, rest on your laurels, so to speak. You have to continue to be adaptable to what changed, because this has always been and continues to be a very fluid situation. So we're hopeful that there will be enough testing and enough PPEs and the things that we talked about. But quite frankly, there are no guarantees.
You've been talking to us as the county executive, but are you comfortable as a resident with a family with the state beginning to reopen this week?
Well, it's, you know, it's scary on all levels. You know, I have elderly parents and elderly in-laws and family members like we all do that I'm very, very concerned about, as well as having children in their 20s who are out in the workplace, who are, you know, living locally. And I have some family members in a workplace in Maryland who her workplace was found to have a spread there, and she had to get tested and all those kind of things. So like any parent, we worry about those things. My wife is a healthcare provider. I certainly worry about that. And you know, what they do, as well as I ask everybody to do, is make sure you're being responsible. You're, you know, washing your hands and using hand sanitizer and wearing your mask and keeping physically distant from people. And, you know, I really haven't seen my family over the last 6 weeks, other through Zoom or, Microsoft Teams or other ways, Facebook, those type of things. Like a lot of families, we're communicating virtually as opposed to, you know, being able to sit around the table at dinner time and do the things that we used to do. But we're no different than any other family in right. Western Pennsylvania. I know it's been difficult. It's challenging because we are a family-oriented community where we like to get together in a lot of different settings, and just haven't been able to do that over the last 6 weeks.
How do you see this experience changing us, changing Allegheny County long-term?
I think it brings forth the disparity that often happens between the haves and the have-nots. You know, we've seen this over time, and unfortunately it seems to be in our nation, you know, one of the problems that we have. Hopefully, coming out of this, we can figure out ways to have more inclusive society where everybody gets access to you know, opportunities. It's hard to say how technology, how doing these kind of remote meetings with Zoom and Microsoft Teams and all the other platforms that people are using to work remotely. It'll be just an interesting thing to see how we come out of this.
Allegheny County Executive Rich Fitzgerald, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Kevin. Have a good day and stay safe.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Pennsylvania's unemployment system has many people feeling left in the dark. In the past 6 weeks, more than 1.6 million state residents have applied for unemployment compensation. About a third aren't receiving funds and are instead looking for answers. Keystone Crossroads' Laura Benshoff has more from the unemployment waiting line.
Renee Auber has literally called the unemployment office 5,000 times.
I downloaded two different auto redialers on my phone so it can continually call from, you know, 7:45, even though they don't open until 8, until they close at 4.
But no one has answered. Auber had been working at a mall north of Pittsburgh when she was laid off last month. She applied for unemployment compensation, but it hasn't been the experience she hoped for.
So I've paid into the system
for at least 12 years. Never thought I'd need it. And now that I need it, I feel like it's such a failure.
Pennsylvania ranks second in the nation, behind only California, in the total number of new unemployment claims following the coronavirus. Nearly a third were told they were ineligible or otherwise have a problem with their application, according to the state. That means, in addition to a high volume of claims, the state is getting hit with thousands of requests for help.
I was calling over 1,000 times a day.
We're experiencing longer than usual wait times. And then right after that, it'll just say chat ended, closed.
I took screenshots of emails that I sent and faxed it to them.
It's like pulling teeth to try to reach somebody.
The result is a frustrating limbo. Auber says she signed up easily enough, but after receiving payments for a couple weeks, she kept filing the paperwork but stopped receiving any money. When she tries to get info, she can't get through.
The one time it did ring, I got so excited, only to get a recorded message from the governor that said, you know, about the census and that every Pennsylvanian matters, and then, oh, we're closed.
So she's pulled $6,000 out of her retirement to pay her bills. Attorney Julia Simon Michel oversees benefits claims at Philadelphia Legal Assistance, which is helping people hung up in this process.
It's happening all over the country in every state. All systems are overwhelmed in this way.
She says Pennsylvania is doing about as well as could be expected, considering the strain, but it could do a better job communicating with claimants.
They would be more understanding if the department said, this is what we're currently doing, and this is the problem we're having, and this is when you can expect it to be fixed,
mm-hmm.
right? As opposed to a black hole.
For its part, the state says we're working on it. Jerry Oleksiak is Secretary of the Department of Labor and Industry.
We feel that frustration as well. We want to get them their benefits. It matters to us. And we are doing what we can as quickly as we can and as thoroughly and as efficiently as we can to get there.
Officials say they've worked through some backlogs. They're also hiring more staff and bringing back retirees. But they're also fielding 21,000 phone calls a week and are about a month behind in answering emails. For Delaware County single mom C. Shonda Woods, patience with this process is hard to come by. She was working three contract jobs as a realtor, home health consultant, and rideshare driver when the shutdown began. She's still waiting on a new federally mandated assistance program for gig workers.
This assistance is only as good as its ability to save people. And right now, it's not saving anyone.
More than 100,000 contract and freelance workers have applied in Pennsylvania, but the state says it won't be able to start paying them until mid-May. Woods did receive a federal stimulus check, but says that's gone and the next few weeks will be very lean.
I literally don't know where my next source of income is coming in, where it's coming from, and how much it's going to be. But I do know where my next bills are coming in at. I've received my additional bills already.
When Woods gets frustrated, she turns to video games.
it's usually a fighting game. I got back into Tekken, Elder Scrolls Online.
Woods says punching people in the face virtually is her outlet when she can't stand to hit redial anymore. Laura Benchoff, Keystone Crossroads.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Data show most American manufacturers are considered essential, but many opted to close during the coronavirus pandemic. 90.5 WESA's Anlie Herring found that in Pennsylvania, keeping the doors open is just one challenge. Business owners also have to worry about employee retention and sometimes surging demand.
Governor Tom Wolf ordered non-life-sustaining businesses to close more than 6 weeks ago, but many manufacturers were exempted from that order, and some are thriving. Among them is Ingmar Medical, based in Pittsburgh's East Liberty neighborhood. Company president Stefan Fremkin says he was worried about the impact of the pandemic.
But then it turned totally around and we were swamped with orders.
Ingmar Medical makes breathing simulators. Engineers need them to test new designs for ventilators, which are critical to treating COVID-19. Hospitals also use them to train staff who don't normally operate ventilators. With the explosion in orders, Fremkin expects his company's annual revenues to double or triple. But tasks like ordering new supplies present their own challenges.
And now all of a sudden you tell your vendor, okay, we want A five times as many, and we want them maybe next week. That just doesn't work like that.
Petra Mitchell of the Economic Development Agency Catalyst Connection predicts such concerns will drive American businesses to switch from overseas suppliers and buy closer to home. She thinks that could help the region.
As those industries really think about what are their supply chains going to look like in a post-COVID-19 world, I think the manufacturers in southwestern Pennsylvania are really going to have some significant advantage.
But in the meantime, some manufacturers are hurting. And while government offers aid with one hand, it shutters business with the other. Rolf Glass in Mount Pleasant was caught in that bind when it shut down for 6 weeks. Owner Rolf Poting says sales at his glass engraving company fell by half and that he was planning layoffs even before the business was deemed non-essential.
That means we had to immediately cut our cost dramatically, talk to our major lenders, and just put everything in almost like a freezing mode in order to survive.
Rolf Glass will reopen this week because the Wolf administration has lifted restrictions on glass product manufacturing, and the company has gotten help through the Federal Payment Protection Program, too. It won't have to pay back those funds if it uses them within 8 weeks, but after weeks of having no work to pay anyone for, Poting says he won't be able to spend all the money.
It is odd in a way that it's intended to provide the funding to keep people on the payroll. And then in our case, at the same time, we are not allowed to operate.
The coronavirus is creating challenges even for companies that never had to close. Lake Erie Rubber and Manufacturing got government help so it could keep making parts for the transportation and energy sectors. But company president John Meehan says only half his 14 employees have been coming to work.
I think we have a couple employees that are honestly just anxious and afraid to be at work and interacting. A couple of them have small children. And then, you know, I think we have one or two that maybe they got the government funding and they have enough that they don't feel that it's necessary to come to work.
Meehan says he's trying to hire more people and is taking steps to keep them safe, but he admits he's worried.
It's been a struggle to sleep recently because I'm constantly concerned about, obviously, my employees, myself. I have small children. For me, it's a huge financial risk because I've, you know, leveraged all of my own personal assets to take over this business.
Other firms are shifting into entire new product lines. Boathouse, a Philadelphia sports apparel maker, began sewing medical masks and gowns. That allows them to stay open, but founder and CEO John Stropek says they're just barely getting by.
All the work we're doing right now might amount to about a third of what we normally ship in terms of revenue on a daily basis. If something doesn't happen pretty soon, we're going to run out of cash in about 2 to 3 weeks.
Stropek says even if his business can survive for now, it will struggle unless schools open, sporting events restart, and life gets back to something resembling normal. Anlie Herring, 90.5 WESA News.
And for today, that is The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of the show on our website at wesa.fm/confluence or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Joya Zenkovich, Kylie Kozinski, and Megan Harris. I'm Kevin Gavin. Please be safe, and I hope you have a good day of good news.